3CR would like to acknowledge the Kulin Nation, true owners, caretakers, and custodians of the land from which we broadcast. 3CR pays respect to elders past and present of the Kulin Nation. We recognise their unceded sovereignty.
This is 3CR Breakfast.
Oh, yeah.
Alternative news, analysis, and current affairs. Monday to Friday, 7 a.m. to 8:30 a.m.
Only double.
Grab your pants.
Good morning, listeners. You're on the Monday Breakfast Show here at 3CR on 8:55 a.m. You're with me, Hannah, and Rob. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. I just had the most chaotic drive to the station this morning.
You came right 10 seconds before the show started.
Perfect.
Perfect timing.
I was going to be here at 6:38.
Oh, no. What
happened? And it just kept going up.
Oh.
It kept going up. And then Waze just kept, she's like redirecting me. And I was like, I can't get in that lane. And anyway,
Where are you coming from?
Windham Vale.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Bit of a mission.
And it was raining, so everything's a bit... The roads are a bit different.
Yeah. The roads are a bit scary in the rain.
Yeah.
It's a dark, rainy morning this morning.
Yeah, it's bleak.
Yeah.
Anyways, I'm here.
Yay!
I'm alive.
Yes. How was your weekend?
So fun. Started my annual rewatch of Buffy.
Oh my god, amazing. What season are you up to?
I just watched the episode last night with the teacher who turns into a praying mantis, really early on.
Oh, is that season one?
Yeah, it's like episode 5 or something.
Yeah.
Such a banger of an episode.
Oh, I gotta rewatch.
What else did I do? I was thinking about this all weekend, actually. On Friday night, on the way home from work, I saw a Coles truck with the progress flag on it.
Mm-hmm. Classic.
I don't know if I've ever seen one before, but that actually disgusts me. Like,
yeah, we love corporate
pride. They have a deal with Palantir.
Yeah.
They have a deal with Palantir, the like intelligence tech agency that has a deal with both the CIA and the IDF.
Yeah.
And whichever court it was, I can't remember, the ACCC are taking them to court for raising the prices. So they have an example, they have a toothpaste, which is $5.50. And then they raise the price to $7 for like 6 weeks or something, right?
That's insane.
And then they drop it down to $6 and say, this is a discounted item. Even though it's obviously still above the original price. And these people are using the progress flag.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nah, I don't want to.
It's finest.
Yeah, where was the permission?
Yeah.
Anyways, how was your weekend?
It was good. I had COVID last week.
Oh, no.
Yeah, but feeling better now.
Yeah.
I had a good weekend, though. Yesterday, nice. I volunteered at the 3CR tent.
Oh, fun.
The Sydney Road Street Party.
I literally would have just missed you.
So sad.
By, like, 45 minutes.
Damn it.
It got so busy.
Yeah.
Did you see the guy walking around with the MAGA hat on?
No.
There was, like, a MAGA... There was a guy wearing a MAGA hat.
Oh, no.
At the festival. And we walked past each other twice. And the second time... I was in my little Clothing the Gaps shirt, just as always was, always will be. And he was just like, he was looking at me.
He's in the wrong place.
And I was like, what are you doing here?
Yeah.
What are you doing here? Anyway.
Yeah.
Did you have fun?
I had a great time.
Yeah.
It was really nice. It was really nice.
It was a great day for it.
Yeah. It was hot. It was hot really in that tent.
Yeah.
Humid.
Yeah.
I was like clammy for days.
I think I got there at like 11:15 and it was not that busy. But then by the time I left, it was like getting really busy.
Yeah, it was nice.
But it was good to see some folks
Yeah, I got a spiral potato. My favorite.
Shout out spiral potatoes.
Oh, every time I see one, I have to get one.
What? Did you have like a flavor?
My partner just got it. It was just salty goodness. I don't know.
Salty goodness. I love that.
Actually, for the first two interviews on the show are going to be from yesterday's Sydney Road street party.
Stunning.
The second interview I'm going to play will be with Caitlin, who is a 3CR volley. And we talk about, you know, how great volunteering at 3CR is and why people should subscribe. And yeah.
Love it.
And first up on the show, we're going to listen to an interview that me and Izzy Brown from Resident Frequency Show did with the iconic rapper BVT from Gadigal Country. And we talk about, you know, why music as an art form is important for decolonization and what it's like being a femme in the rap scene in Sydney and the importance of community spaces and stuff.
Cool. I'm really excited to hear that.
Yeah.
It's going to be great.
Do you want to talk about what you've got lined up for the show?
Yeah. So at 7:40 or 7:45, depending on how we go, I'm going to be speaking with Rowan, who's a member of Pride and Protest, which is a queer activist collective from Gadigal land. And they've been campaigning for some time to bring Mardi Gras back to its radical roots and also fight for social justice in the queer community. So you your listeners may or may not have seen over the weekend, not only was their float banned from attending Mardi Gras because of social media posts that Pride and Protest have posted, and also for their, you know, like they've carried signs saying no pride in genocide at queer events before, and Mardi Gras clearly aren't into supporting that. But not only that, but some members of Pride and Protest, including Rowan themselves, walked at Mardi Gras with the Drag King Sydney float, which included a Palestinian flag and was then sort of assaulted by New South Wales police. So we'll be speaking to Rowan at 7:40 to tell us all about those things. At 8 o'clock, we're going to be hearing another iteration of our regular segment here on the Monday Breakfast Show from the Common Social Change Library, Tiny Sparks and Turning Points, which will give us a bulletin of history of radical events that happened across the continent. So that's happening at 8 o'clock. And then if we have time, we'll also be hearing a conversation that Marissa from the Do and Time Show did last week with David Murray, who's the strategic projects lead from Jesuit Social Services, about the expansion of Malmesbury Youth Justice Centre, which was announced last week.
Cool.
And yeah, that's what we have coming up on the show.
Sounds like a great show. Should we get into the headlines?
Sure.
Some folks know about it, some don't. Some will learn to shout it, some won't. But sooner or later, baby, here's a ditty. Say you're gonna have to get right down to the real nitty gritty. Let's get right down to the real nitty gritty now. One, two, nitty gritty now, yeah, boom. Nitty gritty. Right down to the real nitty-gritty.
You're listening to the Monday Breakfast Show on 3CR Community Radio. These are the news headlines for Monday, the 1st of March, 2026. The United States and Israel have launched large-scale military attacks on Iran, killing Iran's supreme leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, along with senior security officials in what marks a dramatic escalation across the Middle East. Iran's Revolutionary Guard says it has retaliated, launching strikes on dozens of sites hosting U.S. troops across the region, as well as Israeli military targets in Tel Aviv. Explosions have been reported in multiple countries, including Qatar and the United Arab Emirates, as airspace across much of the region has been shut down. U.S. President Donald Trump has warned Iran it will face what he called a, quote, force that has never been seen before, end quote, if it continues its response. Iran's government says an interim leadership council is now in place while a new supreme leader is selected, as state media reports more than 200 people have been killed in strikes across the country. Iran's retaliatory attacks have targeted U.S. and Israeli assets in several Middle Eastern countries, including Iraq, Saudi Arabia, and Oman, raising fears of a wider regional war. As civilians across the region shelter and borders close, calls are growing for restraint, even as global powers double down on military escalation. This is a developing story. We'll continue to bring updates as they come in.
Also in news this week, digital rights advocates are warning that age verification and biometric surveillance are rapidly becoming the new normal online, with serious consequences for privacy, free expression, and safety. In its latest Effecta newsletter, the Electronic Frontier Foundation says companies are increasingly asking users to hand over government IDs or facial scans, often with little real accountability. One of the biggest concerns is Discord, which is rolling out mandatory age verification globally. The move comes despite the company already knowing the risks. Last year, attackers accessed around 70,000 government ID images submitted by Discord users through a third-party system. Even so, Discord is asking users to trust new assurances that ID data will be deleted and facial scans will stay on personal devices. As EFF puts it, users are being asked to simply believe that, quote, this time it will be different, end quote. EFF warns that age verification systems don't raise security risks, they also chill speech. Linking online activity to government-issued ID, the group says turns the internet into a monitored space where people think twice before speaking freely. Quote, when you lose your rights online, you lose them in real life, end quote. EFF argues, describing age verification as a form of censorship and surveillance rolled into one. The newsletter also highlights leaked documents suggesting Meta is considering adding facial recognition to its smart glasses, reportedly timing the move for a period where civil society groups are distracted by other crises. And it points to recent Super Bowl ad from Amazon Ring that quietly normalized biometric surveillance in public spacing, in public spaces, presenting it as community safety while expanding corporate control over who and what gets tracked. EFF says these developments show how surveillance is being normalized through consumer tech, often without public consent or meaningful debate. As one of EFF's staffers puts it, saying, quote, there's a chilling effect when people know everything they say could be tied back to their government ID, end quote. Digital rights groups are calling for resistance, warning that once biometric surveillance is embedded into everyday platforms, rolling it back becomes far harder.
And finally, in the news this week, far-right party One Nation is surging in national polling, with new data suggesting nearly 60% of Australians say they'd be open to voting for the party at the next federal election. While One Nation and its leader, Pauline Hanson, have been part of Australian politics for three decades, this level of mainstream acceptance marks a significant shift. Political analysts say this isn't about a sudden reinvention of one nation, but about the conditions around it. Economic pressure, housing stress, and rising inequality have combined with fear-driven politics following the Bondi attack to create what researchers describe as perfect conditions for populist mobilization. One Nation's messaging built on grievance, nationalism, and scapegoating is finding a wider audience in an increasingly volatile political landscape. Importantly, this rise isn't happening in isolation. Researchers situate One Nation's momentum within a broader realignment where trust in major parties continues to erode and culture war narratives fill the gap. As the analysis notes, right-wing populism thrives when political debate shifts away from material solutions and toward identity, blame, and perceived threats. The warning here is not just about One Nation itself, but about the environment enabling its growth. As Hansen's party gains legitimacy, ideas once confined to the political fringe are being normalized, therefore reshaping public debate, narrowing the space for collective progressive solutions. This is less about One Nation changing and more about Australian politics, quote-unquote politics, moving further right. These have been the news headlines for Monday, the 1st of March. You're listening to 3CR on 855 AM.
Always bringing you the latest union news.
They're coming after us at the moment. They want to get rid of penalty rates, the big push from businesses. They want to get rid of all the things that you and I have fought for.
So there's tens of thousands of jobs gone, contracted out to sham contracting arrangements.
On 8.55 a.m. and on the web, 3cr.org.au.
What's taking place in Palestine is horrendous.
Here are some ways that you can keep yourself informed and involved.
Listen in to Palestine Remembered every Saturday morning at 9:30 a.m. or listen to the podcast.
Join the APAN mailing list at apan.org.au for updates, news about actions you can get involved in, and where you can donate to provide humanitarian assistance.
Listen to other news and current affairs programs on 3CR that also cover Palestine.
The oppression of the Palestinian people has been going on for 75 years. It has to stop. You can be part of making that happen by staying informed and active.
APAN is a proud supporter of 3CR.
You're listening to the Monday Breakfast Show here at 3CR on 855 AM. First up, we're going to bring you a conversation that me and Izzy Brown did from Resident Frequency, the show here at 3CR on Thursdays at 12 p.m, where we spoke to BVT, iconic Sydney rapper, yesterday at the Sydney Road Street Party at the Howler. BVT is an iconic queer rapper from Gadigal land. Have a listen.
Here we are upstairs at the Howler, the Sydney Road Festival, and we're super excited to be backstage with the one and only BVT. How you doing?
I am good. How are you?
So good, especially after seeing you. Absolutely mind-blowing performance. Slayed it. You know, it's hard work going out there wearing just gaffer tape in broad daylight. Well done.
Yeah, that's kind of how I'm going to regulate my body temperature from now on. I feel like I'm getting too sweaty at gigs, so I'm going to gaffer tape it all.
Genius.
Sick. And yeah, how's it been in Nam? Like, I know you're from Sydney, yeah? Do you come here often?
Look, I've actually been back and forth with, like, Gadigal to Nam, actually, for a few days now. I was in Fed Square for supporting Big Frida on Friday, I think it was. And then I had to fly back home, do some stuff for Mardi Gras, then fly back here and do it again. And honestly, I used to have a bit of a, like, you know how Sydney and Melbourne have a sibling rivalry between each other, who's better than who, but honestly, I feel like Melbourne's kicking our ass right now. They're kicking our butts badly.
Oh, that's good news. Definitely good news. Yeah, I was in a hip-hop band in the 90s in Sydney, and we all moved to Melbourne because we thought Melbourne was kicking ass a bit more in the music scene. Definitely in terms of venues, free gigs, community spaces, it's really been happening. Whereas, like, back then, I think, you know, there used to be a lot of kind of squatted underground kind of stuff. But, yeah, I don't know. What's it like now? Like, I know the scene back then, hip-hop especially, was very male-dominated. But it seems like there's a real flip in the script right now with the rise of, you know, First Nation, queer, yeah, deadly hip-hop artists. How is it?
It's actually been mad. So, like, to mention some deadly hip-hop First Nations artists, we have Baka, of course, the matriarch. And then we have Miss Kanina, who's doing their thing. Like, I feel like Miss Kanina is so great because, you know, she's floating over many, many genres, but can definitely hold her own with bars dropping. So it's been sick. And then obviously the West Sydney culture is taking it up a notch with A-Girl, and even like alt artists and R&B artists and pop artists and artists that really just bend the genre, like Devorah and Juju Lips and all them. So, you know, I'm just adding myself to the mix and bringing that sauce, that flavor. And yeah, it's good. It's good. I mean, it's still male dominated, but we're here and we're not going anywhere.
I noticed in your set you were talking about how you're not signed and community support has helped you like rise up. And how has community support or like community radios helped you become successful, and how do you think it helps up-and-coming artists?
Look, community in general is a very, very important thing for you if you are, you know, living in the margins and on the fringes of I guess the norm or mainstream society. So as a queer person, you need your queer community. As a colored person, you know, you need your friends that are from different ethnic backgrounds or the same ethnic backgrounds. That intersectionality of identity is so, it just plays such a pivotal role in how the world perceives you and also how you experience the world. So having community behind me in everything that I do has been such a blessing, because they got me here, you know? They continue to want to see me win, and that's what I want, because I'm always giving back to them too. It's a symbiosis, it's common unity.
Yeah, and with decolonization, you have a lot of songs about decolonization. And do you want to speak more on how important music is as an art form for decolonization?
Yeah, I think art in general is important, period. You look at all of the artists that have shifted the culture and revolutionized everyone from day dot, they have had some sort of political message, they have had some sort of activism behind them, whether they meant to or not. You think about NWA, they were just fed up with the way that they were being treated by oppressive forces and by authorities, and so they, you know, created FTP, and that shifted a whole entire culture. You got people like Tupac, who also, you know, spoke out on things from a male perspective on how, like, black women were being treated, you know? You need to understand that this, and when I say you, I mean, like, the listener, anybody, you know, who's questioning how important the arts are. We are single-handedly the most influential people. Artists take their experiences and put them into what they do, and they create it in such a way that once it's consumed, it's embedded in the DNA, you know? So I think that's why the government doesn't like to support it. Hey-o.
Hell yeah. And I guess in terms of like venues and the scene in Western Sydney, we once did a gig with Public Enemy on a basketball court in Campbelltown many years ago, and that was the start of the Street University. And there was a whole lot of like kind of hip hop and workshops and kind of youth doing, you know, really creative stuff. And I just wonder, you know, how that scene is like in the street. There's still access for people to be doing that, like community studios and that kind of thing.
That's really cool. I didn't know that was the lore of Street Uni. So that's really epic. Street Uni still exists. It's still a community space. It's still utilized by so many people from all different backgrounds. I'm pretty sure the queer community, like the ballroom, voguing ballroom community, has used it, you know, for West Ball many, many times, for queer people that live out west that need their visibility and safety. So it's really great that that space can exist. And then obviously, you know, youth that need, I guess, a safe haven for their creative expression, and a safe haven even just to go play shoot hoop, you know, go play basketball and dunk on them one time, you know, like, it's great that that exists. And I think it's important that we continue to build those spaces up. We fund those spaces, because I would have died for that as a kid. I wanted it so much that I knew if I couldn't receive it in my youth, that I wanted to have it in my adulthood by giving that to the community. Like, that's ultimately a dream.
Have you got any collabs coming up that we don't know about? Hey.
Someone actually just hit me up for a collab in my DMs today. I won't tell you who it is just yet in case I jinx it, but it sounds really cool, and I'm excited to work with this artist. So, you know, fingers crossed, and stay tuned to hear if that collaboration comes to fruition. But I can tell you that they're another artist I really respect. And they're really doing their thing. They got a raw sound. So we'll see, I guess. Right now I'm just, you know, promoting Buwaya, the album I released in December. And this has kind of been an accidental tour with all the festivals and little side gigs that I'm doing. So yeah, I'm hoping that folks can really jam with it. But yeah, that's me.
Oh, and Mudrat. You're about to perform with Mudrat any minute. What do you guys got in store?
Well, we have literally one song that we've collaborated on, so I guess you'll know when you hear it. But I'm excited for Mudrat to play. Big ups to the Rat and the Mischief. And yeah, let's get feral, let's get silly, and every damn year is the year of the Rat.
That was a conversation that me and Izzy Brown from the Resonant Frequency show had with the musician BBT. To check out her music, search for BBT, and to hear their song with Mudrat, search FME by Mudrat and BBT. Sadly, can't play it on the air. Lots of swearing, but you should listen to it in your own time. It's a banger.
3CR is about community, and we welcome your participation at the station.
3CR is open to a wide diversity of volunteers and is a great way to connect with Melbourne's activist community.
Have you ever thought about volunteering, doing a reception shift, getting a program on air,
training in radio skills, or contributing to one of the station's committees?
There are many ways to be involved at 3CR.
To find out more, go to 3cr.org.au and get in touch.
ThreeCR, your station, your voice.
Then join Sally on Sundays at noon for Out of the Pan.
Welcome to Rainbows Don't Fade with Age on Radio 3CR.
Welcome to Trans Creator Radio.
Where history's queer futures is an audio journey into the
Trans Day of Audibility, a day for us to be heard and not seen.
3CR, your station, your voice.
Ha ha ha!
Yeah, you don't want this smoke, but you want my freedom. BBTE ain't 50 shades, so you can keep them shackles, Mr. Gray. I'm the Op Black Oppo, get a taste of this tomboy tempo. Keep the pace up, aye, mommy. When they always got their eyes on me, I'm so sarap, yummy. Is it cause I'm so la like it? Is it cause I'm guapo or something that your cousins just want me? I got tinted on the door, boy, if I'm too brass, me or Lolo. I know, light skin like Americano. Mixed race, call it hollow, hollow. Shout out to the funnel, funnel. Buckle is a rainbow flag, and the coach ain't holding me back. Keep my name in the sheets, when you see me in the streets, make sure you address me as number one Pinoy fag.
Tomboy, buckle, this flow so mataba. You wanna stop me, but bitch, I am the lucky. Tomboy, buckle, this flow so mataba. You wanna stop me, but bitch, I am the lucky. Y'all need to listen, who owns my decision? Y'all made this mess in my house, so y'all can clean the dishes. Y'all need to listen, who owns my decision? Y'all made this mess in my house, so y'all can clean the dishes. You don't wanna see nothing but the me, even if it means you for real to me, no. You just wanna keep every single key, gatekeeping me for the wanna be, no. Is it jealousy? Cause you wanna be as free as me. Well, I fear my people. Every time I breathe, dance as I speak, telling me stand up and free the people.
Tomboy, mangla, this flow so mataba. You wanna stop me, but bitch, I am the lucky. Tomboy, mangla, this flow so mataba. You wanna stop me, but bitch, I am the lucky.
You're listening to the Monday Breakfast Show here at 3CR and 855 AM. That track was Lalake by BVT. Yesterday as well at the Sydney Road Street Party, I had the privilege of volunteering at the 3CR tent. So next up, we're going to be listening to a conversation that I had with fellow 3CR volunteer Caitlin. Do you want to start by introducing yourself to listeners and where we are right now?
Hello, 3CR listeners. I'm Caitlin and I'm a volunteer with 3CR. And we're at the Brunswick Music Festival on Sunday in Naarm, and we're enjoying running the stall and trying to sell t-shirts and give people an idea about what 3CR is about. And you can get a free sticker. So it's been pretty awesome meeting people and telling them about 3CR.
How long have you been a volunteer at 3CR?
So I started, or I met 3CR in 2011 when I was volunteering at a mental health organisation, which is now called Wellways. And they had the Brainwave show that's been going since about 2010, I think. And they needed more people. And because I've got a journalism background, I was working on their helping on their helpline, and they asked me to do the training. And I did that, and I was on this show for a year or so. And then I was doing a master's in social work and I didn't have the time. But I just kept on dropping in to 3CR and having a chat with people like Leanne and Inez and all the great people there, and met so many fantastic people who are really concerned about community, and so I just kept coming back.
Yeah, I've found volunteering at 3CR really great to connect to our surrounding communities and connect with amazing activists around Naarm and around Australia as well. Why is 3CR so important and community radio so important to support?
I think it's just that it's inclusive, so it doesn't matter who you are or what your interests are. I think you can find a show or a person at 3CR that you'll connect with. I think what I really like about it is, when I was doing social work, there's a lot of talk in that sort of training about, you know, living your values, and that's what I found with 3CR, that it really aligns with my values. and I know that it's a safe place, and I've just met all sorts of different types of people. It's just been incredible. From coming from, you know, like a white middle class background, and working in the mainstream media, it's not very diverse. So this sort of really opened my mind and my life to lots of different sorts of people and expectations and I guess ideas about what it is to live in Australia and what we need to change.
And it's subscriber drive at the moment. What words of support do you have for listeners to subscribe to 3CR?
Well, I'm a subscriber, and for the last few years, I'm not doing it this year, I was actually on the subscriber and station worker committee. So 3CR is one of those great organisations where it's very democratic. So if you listen to 3CR, you can actually be part of the groups that run the whole show, which you don't get anywhere else. And by subscribing, you're helping some fantastic people, some activists, to fight for the rights of poor people in Australia. And I think that's the greatest thing you can do.
Thanks so much for talking to me today about 3CR, and it's been amazing volunteering with you here in the 3CR tent at the Sydney Road Music Festival street party.
Fantastic, and it's great meeting you, and I think we've done really well. We've sold a lot of t-shirts, and hopefully that'll all go into 3CR's coffers to keep us going until July 4, when I have to invite everyone to the 50th birthday party. Because it's going to be a fantastic one at Collingwood Town Hall. So come along.
There's kind of a lot of things that are coming up to the fore at the moment as well, particularly in terms of the way that we imagine, for example, essential work and also sort of essential community life or essential caregiving. And how those function. If we think about sort of the way that queer family often takes very, very sort of different forms and very, you know, important and meaningful forms that often don't match the picture of normative, heteronormative family life. But how so many of the affordances or the restrictions or the kind of the governmental sort of imagining of the way that we should live and what we need to live and what we need to survive really is shaped around heteronormativity. You know, it's around the family life in the suburb, as opposed to many, you know, single individuals who have shared queer family, both sexual and community connections that sustain them and that kind of give them life and give them sort of energy and comfort and safety and security and support.
You're listening to 3CR Community Radio 855 AM on digital and online. 3CR Radical Radio.
Forests are essential ecosystems, mitigating for climate breakdown, cooling the planet, and preserving the wondrous diversity of life. Yet, they are being destroyed at an alarming rate. Here in the Kulin Nations, logging continues, increasing risk of both fires and floods. The Bob Brown Foundation is calling a national day of action, the March in March for Forests. In NAM, join us on Sunday, the 22nd of March at 11 a.m. in Parliament Gardens to demand the protection for native forests. Go to marchforforests.org for all the details, including how to volunteer. March for Forests, Sunday, the 22nd of March at 11 a.m.
A 3CR supporter.
Trans Family is a not-for-profit organization providing a peer support group for loved ones, including parents, siblings, extended family, and friends of a trans and gender diverse person. Trans Family runs discussion groups in person and online. We offer a safe space to share your experiences, ask any questions regarding your situation, and provide peer support. We are especially keen to hear from loved ones in regional and rural Victoria. Donations to Trans Family are tax deductible. For more information, visit transfamily.org.au or look for us on Facebook. Trans Family is a 3CR supporter.
You're listening to the Monday Breakfast Show on 3CR 855 AM. That song was called Ingobernables.
By Sin Dios.
Sorry. Hannah told me the name of the song and it went straight out of my brain. Anyway, we're on Friday night Pride and Protest, a queer activist collective on Gadigal land campaigning to bring Mardi Gras back to its radical roots and fight for social justice in the queer community and beyond, had its float banned from Mardi Gras. The Sydney Gay and Lesbian Mardi Gras cited social media posts by Pride in Protest, which call out a Jewish LGBTQIA organization by the name of Dainu, a quote Zionist lobby group, end quote. At Mardi Gras itself, video footage shows New South Wales police assaulting queer and trans members of the Drag King Sydney float, which included a Palestinian flag. To tell us more about the weekend's events, the Monday Breakfast Show is now joined by Rowan, a member of Pride and Protest who was part of the group picked out and violently removed from the parade by police. Good morning, Rowan.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for joining us on the show. Maybe you'd like to tell us about the removal of Pride and Protest float.
So we, on Friday before the parade, we received a threatening notice from Jesse Matheson, the CEO of Mardi Gras, saying that our Mardi Gras parade float called Celebration Without Compromise would be banned following that we breached certain TNCs, specifically code of conduct around harassment, bullying, discrimination of other people or groups. And yeah, as you said, like allegedly for a social media post critiquing moves by Danu, which was initially critiquing them on their threats to pull out of the parade if there weren't going to be, you know, more policing of the Mardi Gras parade. That's what happened on Friday. We were asked to remove those posts we'd be banned from marching. Danu have were also quite concerned following the recent rally against Israeli President Isaac Herzog, who described it as a bit of like a violent riot by protesters. Danu have in the past, in 2024, when they publicly opposed Mardi Gras' statement on calling for a ceasefire in Gaza, following that they paid the board director at the time, Louis Hudson, to visit Israel. So there's been some lobbying happening within Mardi Gras and things like that. The notice given to us required us to reply by close of business to respond. And the contact person who received this was working full-time in the medical sector, and we only really had 6 hours to respond. We didn't respond to that initial notice. And they made the decision to ban us from the parade.
So now it's not just the float, but Pride and Protest itself that is banned, right?
Yeah, there's been conceptions that made that we could possibly be banned from future parades as well, which is quite concerning because we want this to be our parade because it's for us, the queer community, and we're a grassroots queer community organisation, and we consider lots of us ourselves do like marching in the parade and do want to be a part of that. It's our parade, and it's unfortunate that there's these threats now that will be excluded for future ones.
And at the same time, members of the New South Wales Police and the Liberal Party are allowed to march in Mardi Gras, right?
Yes, yes. Pride and Protest have made the point that, the Liberal Party and New South Wales Police could easily fall under this category of breaching the TNCs for their conduct of harassment, bullying and discrimination. The Liberal Party being a party that locks up trans women in men's prisons in the NT, or has attacked, trans youth wanting affirming healthcare in Queensland, and, a police force that continues to over-police the queer community and other marginalised communities, continually brutalising these communities still today.
Mm. So, Rowan, maybe you can tell our listeners a little bit about other criticisms of the Sydney Gay and Lesbian Mardi Gras over recent years and how they've responded.
Yeah, so there's been a few things that have happened most recently, and part of our rally to Hyde Park, the holding area on Friday, a few of us were handing out trans flags to other parade floats that were going in because we think that showing solidarity and support for the trans community shouldn't be an imposition, which the Mardi Gras board had said in response to a voted for members' motion at the annual general meeting last year to support trans rights and oppose partnerships that with companies that donate to the Trump administration and support the administration. So there's been ongoing debates right now with Mardi Gras about trans rights. During that time as well, we've heard news break about board directors that we helped campaign for and elect, like Luna Chu, this year. The only trans woman on the board was misgendered in a notice. Forget the word, sorry, but like in a bit of a notice that censured and there was a bit of a censure motion to Luna Chu and Damien, and Luna was misgendered in that notice. So there's been some transphobia going on, and there's also been some poor responses and some gross, disgusting responses from the Mardi Gras board to voted for members' motions that were voted up in the annual general meeting last year. One of them was also around, so there were two others that were also rejected. One was on public funding and advocating for a 100% publicly funded model for Mardi Gras. And the other was for Mardi Gras to urge politicians to commit to anti-discrimination reforms or they won't be welcome in the Mardi Gras parade. And they responded to those voted for motions saying that they will be rejecting them on a few, just lazy and disgusting bases. So that's been a constant struggle that we've had with the board most recently. And we are trying to engage with the membership at the moment in calling for an extraordinary meeting to spill the board and sack the co-chairs of the Mardi Gras board at the moment, because, over the past few years, Pride and Prejudice has been engaged and involved in the Mardi Gras membership to be, signing up the queer community and getting them involved and participated in these democratic processes that Mardi Gras has, like the annual general meeting and the board director elections, and we move motions calling for Mardi Gras, this cultural beacon, to be doing certain things to advance queer rights and support social justice and social justice issues. And we also run election campaigns for Mardi Gras board director candidates that we campaign for.
Sure. Rowan, if you don't mind, let's move to talk about Saturday night at Mardi Gras itself. Can you tell us what happened there at with the Drag Kings float?
Yeah, so a bit about the night too. I'd say there's been notes about it being there being noticeably less people. Like the ABC was saying, there's notably less people attending Mardi Gras this year, despite an increase in policing. And I don't think those factors are, attributable to each other. And I wouldn't be surprised if any in the queer community stopped to think about whether they should even celebrate Pride or and who they are that night, especially considering recent announcements for more heavy-handed operations, a new riot squad unit responding to so-called hate crimes that we know will be used for pro-Palestine actions, and announcements that there will be police armed with rifles on the night by New South Wales Police Force with oversight and approval of, the Commissioner and Premier Chris Minns. The reach of this policing that's also put on Mardi Gras to pay hundreds of thousands and millions over the years was concentrated on us, a grassroots queer community organisation, which was banned by Mardi Gras CEO Jesse Masterson. So when we tried, we marched to the parade, to the holding area from Town Hall, which is a bit of a march as well, and a group of us were demanding we be let in behind lines of police across pathways into the holding area. And then a few of us got tickets with yes, another praise bloat of Drag Kings, and we got into we got in with this praise bloat into the holding area, had zero issues with getting in and being inside with as registered participants with their float. It was, you know, till we made our way to line up with other floats that we were picked up by police and forcefully removed from parade. And a couple of us in the queer community, including myself, were also given a move on order to not go near what should be our Pride March. And this was all on the basis that we disturbed the peace and not merely allegedly trespassing for being part of the band parade float. So Ellie, one of the protesters, was handled by several cops and violently removed by police. She's been assaulted by police before, and the federal police force, like in December last year, in a bathroom in Sydney Airport. So this was a really stressful time for some of us when we were being removed by police. And, yeah, you know, literally as news broke about US and Israeli attacks on Iran, atop of their ongoing and unceasing genocide in Palestine, Ellie was grabbed by police for waving a Palestine flag, a flag that was, you know, flown by a number of other floats already marching the parade, and the flag was confiscated by the police. Another person in our group was grabbed by the neck and shoved to the ground, and some of the drag kings that were part of the float were also removed from the parade, even though they weren't part of the, even though they weren't also ticketed with Pride and Protest, had tickets with Pride and Protest. So, yeah, that kind of happened on Saturday night, sorry. There was also a run-in I had personally where I was just randomly ref tested on the night, but like it's quite unusual and really telling over this over policing of the night that I have multiple run-ins with police. There was a few other incidents where, you know, we had to avoid certain like streets and locations as well that we saw police coming through. So yeah, this can be like a very I think like this over policing didn't really produce any outcomes for community safety. It only creates alarm for lots of the queer community.
Rowan, we only have a few minutes left of the interview, but maybe you'd like to end by just talking to us about a little bit more about your experiences as an activist on Gadigal land as the Minns government continues to expand police powers and anti-protest laws.
I think what we saw on the 9th of February for the Herzog, the rally against Israeli President Isaac Herzog, was really distressing and quite unprecedented in the level of police attacks. We had a Mardi Gras street rally a few weeks back, which we heard from 78er Ken Davis, who talked a bit about those parallels with the first night of the first Mardi Gras night on the anniversary date of the Stonewall riots in 78, the Isaac Herzog rally, and explaining that there have been more police powers put in place compared to 78, and it's quite distressing right now being involved in organising in Sydney at the moment with Menzies' police state that he's popping up right now. And there's more plans in future around banning certain protest slogans, and there's been vague calls around, like, banning weekly rallies, like he's mentioned, that there shouldn't be, you know, weekly rallies happening or rallies happening every weekend in press conferences. So those are quite distressing signs. There's been a few things that have been done to, I guess, address this. There's been, you know, free legal clinics set up, and Pride and Protest are going to hopefully set up a bit of a similar free legal clinic for people who experience policing on Mardi Gras night or during the Mardi Gras season from 14th Feb to Mardi Gras night on the 28th. So those are a couple of things that we're doing right now around the over-policing and increased police powers at the moment.
Well, thank you so much for joining us on the show, Rowan, and best of luck with the work that you're doing out there in Gadigal land to bring Mardi Gras back to its radical roots.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
That was Rowan from Pride and Protest, a queer activist collective on Gadigal land campaigning to bring Mardi Gras back to its radical roots and fighting for social justice in the queer community and beyond. We were talking about how Pride and Protest had its float banned from Mardi Gras, and potentially the organization itself banned from Mardi Gras, alongside the New South Wales police assaulting queer and trans members of the Drag King Sydney float, which included a Palestinian flag. You're listening to the Monday Breakfast Show on 3CR. Stay tuned.
We have a right to be in public space, undertaking political activity. That is not something that people should be telling us that we can't do.
Multiple actions rolling over months and years and create huge sustained pressure of social change.
And what we're seeing around the country right now is increasing repression of protest.
Protest works. That's why I think we're seeing it criminalised all over the place.
3CR. Stay tuned. Stay radical.
You're listening to the Monday Breakfast Show here at 3CR on 855 AM. It's 8:03 in the morning. And now we're going to be bringing you our monthly segment, Tiny Sparks and Turning Points, where they will bring us radical history and dates from across March. Have a listen.
Tiny Sparks and Turning Points is a monthly selection of protests, strikes and significant dates concerning social change in Australian history. This segment is presented by the Commons Social Change Library, a repository of more than 1,500 resources for campaigners, which can be found at commonslibrary.org.
On the 1st of March 1865, Brisbane held its inaugural 8-hour day parade. This marked the winning of the 48-hour week by stonemasons and others 7 years earlier. The day was observed as a public holiday by the government, banks and many businesses. Hundreds of workers marched through Brisbane carrying flags and banners bearing their union's insignia. Following this, they and the assembled crowd travelled by steamer to Eagle Flat Farms, where a monster picnic and sporting carnival were held. A banquet and ball were attended by 500 people in the evening.
On the 1st of March 1943, thousands of women textile workers went on strike in Sydney, seeking a pay increase and improved wage parity with men.
On the 1st of March, but in 1993, hundreds of thousands of workers went on strike and rallied in Victoria against attacks on unions, as well as privatisation and austerity measures introduced by the Kennett government.
On the 2nd of March 1981, workers at the Vic Rail Motor Garage returned to work after forcing their employers to reinstate a colleague who'd been sacked for refusing to do unsafe work.
On the 2nd of March 2015, First Nations activists set up a refugee camp on Matagorup, also known as Harrison Island. This formed part of protests against the state government's defunding of Aboriginal communities.
1,000 people rallied on the 3rd of March in 1966 after the Sydney Opera House's Danish designer Jørn Utzon was forced out of the project due to cost-cutting and bureaucratic interference. Led by architect Harry Seidler, author Patrick White, and director of the Art Gallery of New South Wales, Hall Missingham, protest marched from the Opera House building site to New South Wales Parliament House.
On the 4th of March 1804, convicts at Castle Hill launched a revolt with the intention of freeing the entire colony. Gathering in their hundreds, they marched to Parramatta, where they were defeated at Vinegar Hill by the better armed authorities.
On the 4th of March 2015, tens of thousands of people rallied around the country against the Abbott government's austerity drive.
On the 5th of March 1831, 28 women convicts arrived at the recently opened female section of Newcastle Jail. They were sent there as a form of secondary punishment after they had taken part in an uprising at the Parramatta female factory the previous month.
On the 6th of March 1974, a demonstration calling for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander land rights was held outside Parliament House in Canberra during a visit by the Queen.
On the 7th of March 1985, the Sydney Peace Squadron attempted to prevent US nuclear warships from docking by placing canoes, yachts and surfboards in their way.
On the 8th of March 1892, 500 unemployed people rallied in Adelaide's Victoria Square demanding work.
On the 8th of March 1975, around 10,000 people joined the Sydney International Women's Day March. Among other things, protesters called for funding for childcare, the removal of laws impeding reproductive rights, and an end to discrimination and sexist violence. Held during International Women's Year, the march was followed with a festival and concert in the town hall, which packed in 3,000 attendees.
On the 10th of March 1928, Noongar activists visited the Premier of Western Australia in Perth to demand freedom of movement for themselves and other Aboriginal people.
On the 11th of March 2003, hundreds of women in Byron Bay protested the looming invasion of Iraq by spelling out "No War" with their naked bodies.
Black GST, genocide, sovereignty and treaty activists and supporters launched the Stolen Wealth Games protests on March the 12th, 2006, by setting up Camp Sovereignty in King's Domain, Melbourne. Situated a few hundred metres from Government House, this served as a base for land rights protests during the Commonwealth Games. For over a fortnight, hundreds of protesters engaged in dialogue with visitors and tourists and held a series of rallies and actions around the city. Camp Sovereignty was re-established in 2024 to provide a peaceful space for cultural, political and spiritual gathering on unceded land.
Seamen working aboard whaling ships docked in Sydney Harbour struck on the 13th of March 1837 for an increase in wages from 3 shillings and 6 pence to 4 shillings. The Australian, an early newspaper bearing the same name as today's Murdoch masthead, expressed alarm, stating, quote, "There is reason to fear that combinations, not only amongst labourers of this but of other classes, will take place under present circumstances."
On the 13th of March 1946, women bus and tram conductors held a stop work rally over moves to remove all women from such employment by the Ministry of Transport. Following their meeting, a group occupied the gallery at State Parliament to make it clear they wanted women to remain in the industry.
On the 15th of March 1980, environmentalists rallied outside the Indonesian embassy in Canberra as part of international protests against rainforest logging in Kalimantan.
On the 16th of March 1974, more than 50 women squatted a disused house in Glebe to set up ELSI, Australia's first domestic violence refuge.
On the 17th of March 1948, police brutally attacked striking railway workers and their supporters in Brisbane during what became known as the St. Patrick's Day Massacre. Despite this violence, and in the face of anti-strike laws, the workers continued their industrial action, securing a pay raise a fortnight later.
On March the 18th, 2003, two peace activists scaled the sails of the Sydney Opera House to paint upon it the words "No War" in bright red paint, drawing national and global attention to their protest against the invasion of Iraq. The pair were subsequently jailed.
On the 19th of March 1986, tenants and squatters occupied the exhibition building at New Parliament House as part of a rally that demanded housing for all.
On the 20th of March 1946, homeless people, including ex-servicemen, squatted a disused 20-room mansion in King's Cross, known as Maramana.
As part of industrial action, bus drivers in Perth refused to collect fares on the 21st of March 1996.
On the 21st of March 2009, a climate action flotilla made up of several hundred canoes, surfboards and other vessels shut down Newcastle Harbour, the world's biggest coal port.
On the 22nd of March 1980, 2,000 people marched through Sydney as part of an Australian and New Zealand Day of Action for Gay Rights. This formed part of a bi-national summer offensive for gay rights, which included public forums, meetings, conferences, and widespread distribution of multilingual leaflets and other materials debunking misconceptions and stereotypes.
On the 22nd of March 1989, 6,000 marched in Melbourne against the reintroduction of fees for university.
Following decades of opposition to uranium mining, the Mirarr people called on supporters from around Australia to take part in blockading construction of the Jabiluka mine on their lands from the 23rd of March 1998 onwards. Over a period of 8 months, thousands took part, with hundreds arrested for disrupting work. The blockade was backed by protests and actions around the rest of Australia, including bank boycotts, high school walkouts, and the shutting down of Minor North Limited's Melbourne headquarters.
On March the 23rd, 2003, tens of thousands of students defied media vilification and threats of suspension to join Books Not Bombs school strikes against the invasion of Iraq.
On the 24th of March 1995, members of unions covering the community, health and education sectors participated in a blockade of a road into Tasmania's Tarkine Old Growth Forest. They called for money to be invested in social services rather than subsidies for logging.
On the 24th of March 2022, rallies were held in five locations across Victoria as part of a statewide day of protest demanding accessible public transport.
As part of a burgeoning international boycott of sporting and cultural events connected to the apartheid regime, 500 activists demonstrated on the 7th of March 1971 against a surf carnival at Coogee Beach. This featured a racially exclusive whites-only team from South Africa. Despite the presence of 100 police, protesters managed to get past fences and enter the competition area, holding up events by lying in the sand.
On the 28th of March 1791, Australia's first convict escape by sea took place when Mary and William Bryant, their two children, and a group of other convicts requisitioned a small boat from Governor Phillip. All survived a perilous 5,000-kilometre journey to arrive in Kupang, where they posed as shipwreck survivors.
On the 29th of March 1916, the editor of the Industrial Workers of the World's Direct Action newspaper, Tom Barker, was sentenced in Sydney to 12 months hard labour for publishing an anti-war cartoon.
On the 30th of March 1984, housing activists squatted the abandoned South Vietnamese embassy, turning it into an embassy for homeless people.
On the 31st of March 1978, more than 25,000 anti-uranium protesters marched through Melbourne to highlight the dangers of nuclear power and weapons at all stages of their creation. They were joined by tens of thousands of other people marching around Australia, with 9,000 rallying in Perth and 5,000 in Adelaide. In Brisbane, a third of Queensland's police force were mobilised to prevent anyone from marching in the central city, but 1,200 people demonstrated anyway, while car convoys and smaller marches in the suburbs also defied bans.
7 years later, on March the 31st, 1985, approximately 300,000 people joined in Palm Sunday rallies for peace across Australia.
You've been listening to Tiny Sparks and Turning Points. The segment will return next month. In the meantime, to find out more about the history of social change in Australia, you can visit commonslibrary.org. The Commons Social Change Library is an online collection of educational resources for those involved in community campaigns and social and labour movements. It collects, curates, and distributes key lessons and resources from progressive movements from around Australia and across the globe. The library includes over 1,400 resources covering campaign strategy, community organising, activist history, digital campaigning, justice, equity, diversity and inclusion, and much, much more. It's free to access the library, so check out the collection at www.commonslibrary.org.
Sure. You're listening to the Monday Breakfast Show on 3CR Community Radio. The segment you just heard was from our comrades at the Commons Social Change Library, titled Tiny Sparks and Turning Points, which is a bulletin of a radical events that changed the continent. They'll be back with more next month. And as both the segment and the announcement said, you can find more information about the organization and, yeah, the big list of more events that changed the continent at commonslibrary.org, and look out for their page on the 3CR website, which we will feature if you want to listen back, which is coming soon. The show is going to end with a conversation that Marissa from the Doin' Time show had with David Murray, who is the strategic projects lead from Jesuit Social Services, about the expansion of Malmesbury Youth Justice Centre announced last week, which will see an additional 45 beds added to the prison.
More beds at Malmesbury, a sign of failure, not success. And we're going to be interviewing now David Murray. And David has been working in the field for at least 40 years, quite impressive. And David is a strategic project lead. And we're going to be interviewing him from Jesuit Social Services. And I'm delighted to welcome him to the program. Hello, David. Welcome.
Hi, how you doing?
Great to have you. Now, David, I think this is the first time you've been interviewed here, haven't you? On the show?
I think so, yes. Probably is.
Yeah, right. Because the Doin' Time show is historically a place where marginalised communities are heard, and we create a safe space for that. So can you just start off by telling us a little bit about what's been going on with this expansion?
Well, as you know, the Nazi was shut down, I think, 3 years ago. Something like that.
Yep.
On the basis of the development of the new facility at Cherry Creek, I guess. They've decided to reopen it because, of course, with the change, the proposed changes or the existing changes in the bail laws, there's now increased numbers of people being put in custody, and they've opened it up because they think they need to. And so it's still unclear as to exactly how it's going to operate, but it's essentially 45 new beds, which brings it up to about 75, I think.
Wow. So, yeah, there have been quite horrific bail reforms, haven't there, recently?
Yeah, well, you know, it's been a bit of a saga, hasn't it? I mean, the bail laws were, you know, they've basically become a political football between... it's become very, very politicised and weaponised, so that government has sort of responded to sort of a very volatile public discussion about what to do about youth crime. And sadly, what they've done is they've put their faith in creating an environment where we're going to see more people in custody, but not necessarily produce a better outcome in terms of reform or rehabilitation of people. I mean, we know that putting people in custody, particularly having high numbers on remand where people aren't convicted yet, we know that that is a pretty blunt instrument in terms of dealing with crime. I mean, we have long advocated for a more, what you might describe as progressive response, getting in earlier, dealing with people in the community, working within local communities and families and local community agencies and so on as a better approach. But sadly, not just this jurisdiction, but across the country, the government seems to be investing and putting faith in old and outdated and failed strategies like locking people up.
I mean, there's a 40% increase, isn't there, in the number of young people on remand, isn't there?
That's what it appears to be, yeah. And if you look across the country, that's happening not just in Victoria, but across the, all jurisdictions are doing the same thing. And the thing is that I think people don't appreciate is that that's just going to create in the long term more people who get engaged in the criminal justice system, and they very many of them find it hard to extract themselves from that system once they're in it. And so it's actually, rather than sort of reducing the number of people involved and protecting the community, which is what the banner is, community safety, chances are it's doing the opposite.
Absolutely. I mean, there's money being spent to, to have all these beds, but what about money that can go to community programs?
Well, there is some money coming into community programs, but by nowhere near enough, or nowhere near as much as is been placed in sort of building the prison beds. So I think what we're still wanting to say, and we're encouraging the government to, particularly in the next budget, to honour the commitments that were laid out, or rather, not so much the commitments, but you recall that the youth justice legislation that was put forward to Parliament a bit over a year ago had all sorts of provisions for diversionary strategies, early intervention and so on. And so there have been small amounts of money coming into that, but essentially not enough. And the very vast bulk of investment resources has gone into building prison beds. So I think the jury's still out a bit, but it's not looking good. But we still call on the government to do more in that diversionary early intervention space.
Your CEO, Julie Edwards, from Jesuit Social Services, puts it beautifully, actually, because I'm just having a look at this media release, and she says that expanding the state's prison capacity is not something to be celebrated. It's evidence of systemic policy failures and of misplaced priorities. Can you comment on that?
Well, she does have a way with words. We understand that,
but it's true, though.
Well, yes, it is. It is. Well, I think
it's public knowledge.
It's long since been saying these answers just are popularly put forward, and let's face it, we're getting the pressure on government from particularly populist media like the Murdoch Press and social media, sort of banging on about community safety is the only way to deal with it is to put more people in prison, when the evidence is to the contrary. The evidence is that only just as likely increases the risk of reoffending, but it doesn't actually address the particular circumstances that in particular children and young people are facing. And that's where we've long since said that's where the energy and resources should go.
Absolutely. And there's no harm in saying that, David. It is an absolute atrocity, particularly because we have our First Nations youth as well being overrepresented in prison.
Well, particularly, that's true. And if you look across, again, other jurisdictions beyond Victoria, it is a national disgrace. There's no doubt that the significant number and proportion of Aboriginal children and young people in custody is just disgraceful. And I mean, in Victoria, we have a smaller number, admittedly, but they're still overrepresented, and they still shouldn't be there. But in a if you look at nationally, it's absolutely disgraceful.
I mean, from what I can see here, Jesuit Social Services is a social change organisation working to build a just society where all people can fulfil their potential. I mean, how can people fulfil their potential when they're going back to prison and reoffending?
Well, yes, I mean, that's, of course, and that's why we're advocating for less reliance on that strategy. But what we're doing in our own right, if you like, is that we're trying to push forward with some initiatives that do, I think, address some of those questions. So we're particularly focused on restorative justice and restorative practice as a way of dealing with some of the young people's circumstances on their behaviours. Also, we have created a school called Ignatius Learning Centre, which is specifically targeted at that 15 to 17-year-olds who are on youth justice orders. So we're trying to, and we provide the youth justice community support service. So young people in the youth justice system who are on orders on bail and on the new sort of version of enhanced bail, we provide the support services around those young people. So I guess as an organisation, we're heavily engaged, if you like, in specifically targeting and working with those young people in order to keep them out of custody. And that's kind of why we know, over the nearly 50 years of been doing it, we hear the stories of young people who get themselves enmeshed in this sort of criminal justice system. And we kind of know that things that are driving them into this, into the criminal sort of world, and then we sort of know the things that they're telling us they need to get out of it.
Absolutely.
You're listening to the Monday Breakfast Show on 3CR Community Radio. That was Marissa from the Do In Time Show speaking with David Murray, the Strategic Projects Lead from Jesuit Social Services, about the expansion of Malmesbury Youth Justice Centre, which brings us to the end of the show. You can, of course, listen to the rest of that conversation and more from Marissa and the Do In Time Show at 3cr.org.au/Do In Time or on Mondays at 4 p.m. until 5 p.m. And of course, stay tuned later today. 3CR will be premiering its latest show, Breaking Through, dedicated to highlighting issues faced by Aboriginal people who are currently or formerly incarcerated, created by the team behind 3CR's Beyond the Bars. We just have a few moments left of the Monday Breakfast Show for this week, so I'll just give a quick run through of what else we had. So we started the show with Hannah's conversation with BVT alongside Izzy Brown from the Resident Frequency Show at the Sydney Road Street Party at Hella. And then we heard Hannah having a conversation with fellow 3CR volunteer Caitlin about why folks should subscribe to 3CR and, why 3CR is important. And then we spoke with Rowan from Pride and Protest about the organization's float being banned and police violence at Mardi Gras itself. And before our last segment, you heard Tiny Sparks and Turning Points from our comrades at the Common Social Change Library, talking about radical events over the years that changed this continent, which we'll be back next month, which brings us to the end of the show. So with that, we will see you later and stay tuned for Women on the Line.
3CR Breakfast would like to thank the New International Bookshop, Melbourne's radical bookstore and venue, for their financial support of this program. You can find Nibs opposite reception in the Lygon Street wing of Trades Hall Carlton. You can buy books online and keep up to date with upcoming events at nibs.org.au.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.